It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore creative ways to save money that we can put into action now, like right now. Here is a pandemic leftover for me. Subscription boxes are no longer cutting it in the Kent family. We signed up for a bunch during the height of limiting our outside movements, and I just canceled a $25 per month toy subscription. Like, these toys are plastic trinkets end up in the trash with a lot of packaging waste. And I'm embarrassed that this subscription hung onto my credit card for so long that it was so sneaky, an automatic charge every 3 months. Join in on how you trim. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Emily Guy Birkin is here, money coach, personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa, written 5 money management guidebooks. Emily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's have a reality check on subscriptions, because it seems everything is so subscription heavy, subscription based these days. It can be really easy to forget about one. How should people check their services?
So it's important to look through your bank statements and credit card statements to identify any unused services or subscriptions. Some of them are sneaky, like what you're talking about, where, you know, every month goes by and you're like, oh, I really should cancel that, and you just forget. And so just taking the time to say, like, all right, on this day, I'm going to go through and I'm going to call and cancel all of these subscriptions I'm not using. And then there's the ones that are kind of the zombie subscriptions that just hang on. And so those can be, you might not even realize you're paying them. So, for example, I managed to have 2 separate New York Times subscriptions. I was being charged twice a month for 8 months before I realized it. And I'm the so-called money expert. I actually do check my statements regularly, but because they were staggered, I kept thinking, like, wow, that seems early to be charged for it. It turns out I had opened one under 2 different email addresses and just hadn't realized it. And so that was $20 a month for 8 months. That was $160 oopsie on my part.
And but it's so good you come clean with it. I mean, even a money expert can mess up sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if anyone's going to notice these sorts of subscriptions, it's going to be me, because I am one of those very strange people who actually enjoys balancing my checkbook and filling out spreadsheets with my money. So it's very easy for all of us to kind of lose track of the subscription model. And so I think it's great when you're specifically feeling the pressure financially to go through and say, oh, is there any way I can free up some money because there's these subscriptions I'm not using? But then also get in the habit of every 2 to 3 months just double checking to make sure that there's not a subscription that's hanging on that you've forgotten about.
I've also noticed, too, that we really need to run a cost-benefit analysis here, because I need to observe, like, is this thing worth it? You know, what do I ask myself, my household, to find out if there is a true value in a particular subscription? Because I think that's a really good question to ask before you just cut it.
Yes, absolutely. When you're cutting costs, you know, in my industry and in financial media, we often will go straight to cut the lattes, cut the streaming services. And it's because there's something that's, you know, pretty much universal, and they are kind of a luxury. But the thing is, personal finance is personal. So if Starbucks and Stranger Things are what are getting you through the day, you don't need to cut those. You need to start cutting costs from the easiest, then move up to the hardest. So for, you mentioned the toy box subscription, you're not getting value out of that. You know that your kids aren't going to notice if it stops coming. So that's an easy one to cut. If the, you know, Disney Plus is something that is how you manage to sleep in on Saturday mornings, then keep that, because that is absolutely worth the money.
Emily Guy Birkin, keeping it real, money coach, discussing creative ways to save money as inflation continues to rise. And we want to hear from you. What money saving solutions have you discovered? Are you someone who uses shopping apps? What would you recommend? 800-642-1234. So, Emily, there are also replenishment subscriptions, like you use a particular dish soap or shampoo and it automatically comes to your doorstep every X number of months. How do you feel about those types of subscriptions?
They can be very helpful, and they can actually potentially save you money, because often those replenishment subscriptions will give you a discount if you sign up for the replenishment. But that's another one that it makes sense to audit every once in a while. We are on one of those replenishment subscriptions for kitchen goods, so like trash bags, dish soap. We also get, you know, shampoo and conditioner. And there was a point where we had so much children's toothpaste we could open our own dental practice, and it's that's something where you don't want it to get ahead of you, and so doing an occasional audit, and what's nice is most of those subscription-based replenishment sites will send you an email saying, hey, we're going to be sending you these in 5 days, and so that can be your trigger to be like, oh, do I need all of those, to double check what you have in your pantry, in your stores, and see if it's something that you actually do need to replenish at that point.
It also makes me wonder about the fluctuation in costs. I mean, sometimes you can benefit because they'll give you a percentage off if you have that recurring subscription. But at the same time, we're seeing prices really volatile right now. What if you miss out on a lower price?
So that's the sort of thing that I want people to make like Elsa and let it go. So if you're in a position where you're thinking like, oh, I should try to get the best possible price, because that's what you should do, you know, in quotes, then you need to let that go, because it's not going to make a difference to your day-to-day life. It's not going to be the difference between putting food on the table and not. It's not going to make the difference in leaving an estate or not. Mm-hmm. If you're in a position where you are price checking that closely, I think that there are better ways and better uses for your time than making sure you don't miss out on subscription model to get the best, absolute best price. So if you're the sort of person who really enjoys playing that game, go for it. Absolutely. It's a rush when you're like, yes, I got it for 60% off. But if that's not you and you're only doing it because you feel like you need to, or if you are really worried about money, there are better ways to save that money that don't require you to bend over backwards and do the hula to try to figure out how to get the best bang for your buck with a subscription model that requires that kind of oversight.
Certainly, your time is valuable as well.
Absolutely.
Let's take a call. Rachel joining us from Lake Geneva. Rachel, hi. What's your tip?
Hi. My tip is that my husband and I are really into buying cars from the mid to late 2000s, and we never have a car payment that's over $150 to $200 because we're just not willing to buy into, I think, some of the status of having the brand new car. We've had cars that last us much, much longer than we could ever imagine, and it comes out to, you know, over the years, maybe less than $100 a month for that car. And we just love it. Those cars are now becoming sort of vintage, and we love sort of the experience of having that, the going back in time.
And have you been able to pay off the vehicle? I mean, you talked about the very low car payment, but can you pay the vehicle off?
Yes, absolutely. So usually we're making the payments, we'll have the car payment that's super low, but we'll pay much more than that. So we have it paid off in less than a year usually, and then we don't have any car payments. And that has really been huge for us, is to have all of the debt clear except for, you know, the house and bills, and that's how we do things. We don't go into debt.
Rachel, thank you. Emily, what about this strategy?
Living without a car payment is amazing. And I really commend Rachel for doing that. And I also, I think that it's a great idea to look for used cars. The one caveat I have is make sure that you have a someone who can look over the car for you, whether that's someone who's who's a car guy in your family, because most families have a car guy or girl, and or a mechanic. I am lucky enough to be married to an automotive engineer, and he revolutionized my car buying, because I grew up with the ethos that you buy a car new, you buy an inexpensive car new, and you drive it until the wheels fall off. So you try to have it for 15 or 20 years, and that's not a bad way to be. The problem is when new cars are costing $37,000, that's a very difficult way to manage your transportation. So if you can find a way to buy a used car and feel very confident that you're going to get 10 or 15 years out of it and be able to enjoy the nostalgia of driving a car from when Justin Bieber first emerged on the scene, that can be really a really helpful way to reduce your overall costs.
Rachel, thank you for that call. As we talk with Money Coach, Emily Guy Birkin is here helping to introduce money-saving strategies into our busy lives. Simple, creative ways that might help ease budget pressures in this high inflation. Join in with your ways, your tips, and who taught you how to do it? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're working on better money habits, learning creative ways to save with help from a money coach. A new Gallup poll finds a majority of Americans now say that rising prices are causing them financial hardship. About 56% of U.S. households said they are experiencing economic stress due to inflation. Join in on your money-saving strategies. Questions about staying ahead of bills and housing costs? 800-642-1234. We have personal finance expert and author Emily Guy Birkin as our guide. Stays with us. Let's bring on another call. Mona is in Madison. Mona, what advice do you have?
Hi, thank you. Well, we refinanced our house when it was cheap, which saved us a ton of money. But I was looking at my payment history for our mortgage, and I realized it's due on the 28th of the month. But I middle of the month, and I noticed that if I pay it like $21 more interest than if I pay it on the 12th, and I thought, well, heck, I'm just going to pay it on the 1st. I've got the money. It doesn't matter. So I'm going to save like $200 a month in interest just by moving by paying my mortgage earlier in the month that it's due in.
So paying the mortgage earlier in the month actually will save money in the long run over the course of the payments. Mona, thank you for that. Emily, tell us about how that works.
So that has to do with how mortgage payments are amortized. So you are paying interest, and it is capitalizing daily on your mortgage. And so if you shift when you pay the mortgage, that affects how much of your payment is going to interest, how much is going to principal. Another really easy way to do this, and something that I actually do, is instead of paying your mortgage all at once on the payment dates, so you're doing 12 payments a year, you could split it up and do that in half, your payment in half, and pay it every 2 weeks. So that means you will be doing 26 payments a year, because every 2 weeks there's some months have 5 weeks in them. And so you are going to be paying a little bit towards principal, a little extra towards principal every single year. So that's going to shorten your repayment term. So if you have a 30-year mortgage and you're paying every 2 weeks instead of once a month, You can cut 1 to 2 years off of your payment term, and then that also cuts the amount that you pay in interest over the life of the loan. So that can be a really great way that feels painless because, in general, you know, if you have a $1,500 mortgage paying once a month, doing $750 every 2 weeks is not going to feel any different.
So, like Mona, we too refinanced much earlier in the pandemic to take advantage of those interest rates that were falling very low at the time. Now it's a much different story, of course. But, you know, if you can save enough to do an extra payment once in a while, I often hear, like, put it to the principal, not the whole regular payment. And I just don't know the difference.
So, when you look at your mortgage statements, which obviously, like, we don't get these in the mail anymore, but you can go onto your website, there's something called an amortization schedule. And so that will tell you what every single payment you make scheduled from the very beginning to the very last payment, how much of it is going to the principal and how much of it is going to the interest. And so if you are making an extra payment, so on top of your normal payment, generally banks will let you call and say, I want this to go towards the principal. So you're paying back the amount that you actually borrowed rather than paying it towards the interest that you are going to owe on the next month's payment. So by doing that, you're reducing the amount you owe, which lowers the amount of interest that you're going to owe moving forward.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's go to Tom now in Burlington. Tom, what's on your mind?
I'd like your comments on, I believe people have control over the amount of gasoline that they use. I believe people are being very lazy about it, and we're wasting a lot of gas. And if we had your idea of accounting for something or auditing something, if we had a way of finding out how many miles we drive a week and how much gas are we using a week, and if everybody got together and said, I'm going to drop that number by just 1 mile a week, we could reduce the price of oil and demand for oil and maybe reduce the cost of inflation.
Tom, thank you for that. Emily, how about reducing the amount of driving you're doing in terms of the budget?
I think that's a great idea. I can remember being a teenager in a friend's, his father had picked me up from school with him, and they stopped to get gas, and they took out a book, and this was revolutionary to me because it never occurred to me to do this, and they calculated their mileage and how many miles they got per gallon, and they wrote it down in a little book, and it was in the glove compartment, and that had never occurred to me. I didn't know what a tripometer was because we never reset it in my family's car. And we simply gassed up whenever we needed it. So I think that doing that kind of self-audit can be really, really helpful. Now, it's getting everybody to agree to it in America. That's a bit of a tall order. But doing that sort of self-audit and giving yourself the challenge of, like, okay, I drove this many miles this past week. Let's see if I can do 1 mile less this week. I think that's a great idea. Challenging yourself to improve your gas mileage by doing things like reducing your speed on the highway. Because gas mileage is going to be improved if you are going closer to 60 miles an hour than 80 miles per hour. And doing other things that improve your gas mileage, like taking unnecessary things out of the trunk of your car, making sure your tires are inflated, and making it a challenge for yourself and kind of a game where you keep track of it. It kind of makes it feel like a video game where you can beat your last high score, or actually in this case, low score.
How about getting on the phone and negotiating monthly bills? Some people negotiate prices with their service providers. At this point, what services can be negotiated that way?
So negotiating your bills can feel a little intimidating if you're allergic to negotiation. But it's actually starting with your bills is in some ways kind of the easiest way to do it. And that's because some service providers, like your cable and internet provider and your cell phone provider, are used to negotiating. They are open to changing prices to keep customers because it costs them so much money to get a new customer, and it is so much easier for them to maintain a current customer and maintain that loyalty. So with internet and cable, one really solid strategy is to find out what the price will be for new customers who are just starting with them, and call and say, hey, this is your new customer price. I have been with you for 3 years. Can you match that price for me? The trick with negotiation is to remind your provider of your loyalty. Let them know, like, I've been with you for 3 years. I want to stay with you. It's a good idea to call when you're close to the end of your contract, because that's when the provider is most interested in holding on to you. Mm. And that's particularly true with cell phone providers. And to make yourself someone the customer service rep wants to help. You know, if you call and say, hey, this is what we're going to be doing, that's not going to fly as easily as if you were to call and say, hey, I'd love to be able to do this. Can you help me? And,
let's make pause. Right. Let's pause there with Emily Guy Birkin helping us out with simple money moves. We'll pick this up, hear from you after a news update on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The hottest inflation in 40 years. It's eating into household budgets. We need this infusion of ways to help stop that bleed. And I'm reflecting on Paul and Madison, who appreciates personal finance topics but doesn't think these shows apply to everyone. Paul told us in a recent Caller Only Hour,
a lot of the advice is almost meaningless for people who are making $20 or less in this country. I really almost never hear about how, like, rent is just an insane cost for most people, and we're not seeing any real solutions in that.
And Paul said 3 months of savings for a rainy day is just not realistic. Join in on how you are managing rent, your tips on how to get by, 800-642-1234. Money coach Emily Guy Birkin stays with us. Emily, you heard Paul there. What are some ways people can reduce their monthly rent costs, their housing costs that are really going up and up?
Housing costs are tough because they are, you know, it's a non-negotiable. You can't say, you know what, I'm just not going to pay it this month, or decide to go without a rent and live elsewhere. When the market does what it's been doing lately, which is just going up and up and up, it just can, and without wages keeping pace, it can feel like an impossible situation. All of the solutions are less than ideal. So, you know, get housemates or roommates to room with you is, you know, something that people consistently say. And sure, that'll help save money. But the issue of finding the right roommate, someone who, you know, you trust, who is also employed, who's not going through financial issues themselves, who isn't going to leave dirty dishes on the couch, that's difficult. Moving to a lower cost of living area could mean increasing your commute. So these are all really, really difficult problems. And one of the things, like what Paul was talking about, is a lot of the advice given by people in financial media offers either, you know, Band-Aid solutions or kind of hand-wavy solutions, like, we'll move to Iowa, it's cheaper there, which is not helpful. The issue, I think, is to start looking at your money a little bit like Tetris. in that, you know, if you know you've got a block of money that has to go to rent, and it's going to be a significant one, then you need to start looking around that for smaller blocks of money that you can shift or change or pay in a different way. So, for instance, you might be able to reduce your cell phone bill by switching to a different provider, by negotiating, and that can give you a little bit more money to go to ensure that you've got enough for rent. Another thing is, you know, there might not be any blood you can squeeze out of the turnip. So I always recommend looking for ways to increase your income. And by that, I don't mean go drive for Uber or DoorDash. You can stretch your budget by increasing your income without changing jobs. And by doing that, if you regularly get a large tax refund, you can adjust your withholding allowances on your W-4 form with your HR department and get that money back in your paycheck month to month. Now, that does mean that you're not going to get a large refund the following year, mm-hmm. and you want to get the withholding correct so that you don't end up owing money. But this is can be an instant way to get as much as another $200 per month in your budget, and that can be a game changer in terms of getting breathing room.
Getting it as close to zero as possible on that tax mm-hmm. day when you do your return. So let's say, though, you are looking for a new place to rent. You are shopping around for a new, apartment or condo or, some arrangement. What tips do you have for looking, for talking with landlords, for really closing in on that housing?
So landlords want to know what to expect. So the thing that landlords are dealing with is the same thing that you're dealing with if you're trying to find a housemate. You need to know that you have a reliable tenant who's going to pay on time. If you can provide some sort of reliability, you may be able to negotiate a lower rent. So, for instance, if you've been staying in the same place for a while and the rent has gone up, you could say, look, I will stay for another 2 years if you could keep the rent where it was this year instead of having it raised for the next 2 years. So those are the sorts of things you can do. Know what it is the other party most wants, and let them know that you can give that to them. They want reliability. They want to know that you're going to pay on time. They want to know that you're not going to cause damage to the apartment. And so if you can make it clear that you can do that, they may be willing to lower the monthly rent in exchange for that peace of mind on their part that you're going to be a good tenant.
That predictable tenant, so important. Let's bring in Jerry in Madison on this topic. Jerry, what would you like to bring up?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So in addition to what your guest is commenting on, as far as it's really difficult to change your rent, what I have found has been really useful, though, is these people, they work for you. So if you have an issue, generally after every year, they have a submission that you can go ahead and, or sorry, a piece of paper that you can kind of submit and request that they do different things. For example, in our building complex, there was a lot of, stealing going around, so I wrote a very heavily worded letter, and I was also very upset that they didn't offer any recycling, and this is a complex that houses probably about, 500, 600 tenants. So I thought that was just kind of ridiculous. So in addition to what you're paying, remember that these people work for you, and you can go somewhere else. Moving is always a pain in the butt, but make sure that they know what they're doing wrong.
Okay, so accountability on their behalf, on the landlord's behalf, Emily.
Absolutely. That's something that we often forget as tenants because it feels like the power dynamic is all in one direction. But when I first left college, I was living in an apartment that had a leak from the bathroom into the kitchen, and the complex sent someone over 3 different times to try to find the leak, and they were unable to find it. And so my roommate and I, because they had not fixed this, we put our rent in escrow for the following month. Luckily I had an older friend because I just graduated from college who we were talking about just not paying the rent. And my friend was like, you can't do that. Put it in escrow. So we put the rent in escrow to let them know, look, you know, we are good tenants. We want to pay this money. We need to have a working bathroom that doesn't leak into the kitchen. And it was fixed within 48 hours.
Wow.
So recognizing your rights and your power as a tenant is also really important and can help make sure that you are getting everything you need from the agreement.
Emily Guy-Birkin with us, Money Coach, looking at simple ways to save money. You can join in with your creative solutions, 800-642-1234. Emily, we heard from Pete in Heartland email to say that they recently audited their auto policy and found some savings, about $20 a month, Pete said, and some other ways that they have saved. College-age kids are out of state and greater than 100 miles away and don't drive the family car, which has become a reduced monthly cost. Working from home, Pete says, less commuting, less annual mileage. They canceled roadside assistance because they have had AAA, and rental reimbursement is added to each car. They just removed it. What do you make of those moves?
Those are all great ways to save money. We can kind of get on autopilot when it comes to things like insurance and just kind of keep going from year to year. So auditing your insurance and not just auto insurance, you can also do that with your homeowners or renters insurance as well to make sure that you have the coverage you need and you're not paying for more coverage than you need. Another great way to save some money is if you have a decent emergency fund, one where you could easily pay for the cost of a higher deductible on your auto insurance, then you can lower that deductible, increase the deductible.
Sure.
And thereby lower your monthly premiums. By doing that, you are freeing up more money each month because you know that instead of a $500 deductible, you could afford a $1,000 deductible if you were to get into a fender bender or a crash. That is something that a lot of people don't think to do once they get to a certain level of savings.
Let's go to Lois in Milwaukee with a tip. Lois, what would you like to bring up?
Well, I want to say first that I am at least four decades past the age of raising babies. But the issue I'd like to bring up is to tell young mothers, don't use disposable diapers. Disposable diapers are made from trees. Trees are what we need on this earth to help remove the excess carbon dioxide. And buy diapers, buy cloth diapers. Simply, you can actually buy diaper cloth and even make your own. But it's so important that people stop using disposable diapers. They take 500 years to fully disintegrate, if ever. And the important issue, of course, is the lack of another commodity that'll help us lose, or I should say, put less carbon dioxide into the air.
Lois,
washing diapers is no big deal. You're doing your laundry anyway. Just buy some diapers and forget those damn disposables.
Lois, thank you so much. Emily, your thoughts there?
I love that a lot of money-saving tips are also environmental-saving tips.
Mm-hmm.
We cloth diapered my eldest when my youngest came along 3 years later. It was a lot harder to keep doing the cloth diapering, but I do think that if parents are in a position where they have the time to do the laundry, cloth diapers can be a great way to save money.
Money Coach Emily Guy-Birkin stays with us on Smart Ways to Save in our Daily Money Habits. Still time to talk through your money-saving advice, where you've found extra dollars, your financial circumstances, a tricky money situation you're up against. Bring it on to Emily, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, money coach and author Emily Guy Birkin, giving us a tour through some of the best ways to save money now. Still time to talk about solutions to grow your money quickly or hold on to more of it in the face of high, high inflationary prices. 800-642-1234 to drop us a line. And Emily stays with us along with housing. Mike in Hudson, go ahead. Mike, hi.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to bring up?
Well, two things. Back on the interest thing, I've helped coach some younger relatives, and I'm surprised sometimes, but maybe not so much, that they don't know how interest rates impact their financial bottom line. Like saving money in the savings account to pay off a credit card seemed to be a strategy for one person. I'm like, well, credit cards a lot higher interest rates. You want to pay that off first. And I didn't understand the difference. So I've always prioritized payments based or things to pay off based on interest rates. On the rent piece, when my wife and I were getting married, she was moving out of a rented property. And the landlord said, for this reason and this reason, I'm going to keep your deposit. And I said, well, we made all these improvements and there was some back and forth on it, and I finally went to the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection, got copies of the rules and statutes, and said, here's the bill for everything. It's more than the deposit. So he backed off from that, and we kept the deposit.
Oh, Mike, thank you for bringing those two very personal money approaches there. Emily, go ahead on either one.
So on the interest aspect of it, I think that interest is something that is very difficult to understand except in retrospect. So the power of compounding interest in terms of investments, where if you put money in an investment that is growing at, 7% per year, it is very hard to wrap your mind around how much money that will be worth in the future, unless you're looking back on it. And similarly, with interest rates when it comes to bills, when it comes to things like credit cards or interest you pay on a mortgage, it can be very difficult to wrap your head around how much money that is, because I think our brains just in general aren't built to understand compounding. So that's a difficult thing to teach. I can remember having a lesson on compounding interest when I was a freshman in high school in my social studies class, and I was very interested, but it still didn't quite penetrate. And so that's something that I wish that we spent more time talking about in school, using in like everything from math class to social studies to foreign language classes, using the opportunity to kind of teach these financial properties to help people really understand them better, so that they don't get to this point where like, oh well, I'm doing the responsible thing, putting money in a savings account where it's growing before I pay off the credit card bill with it, and not recognizing what that is going to mean.
Do you have any general tips there on how you structure debt payments with all of the other competing interests of retirement, of long-term savings, of kids, education, and other pots as well?
Mm-hmm. So I kind of look at it as the improv rule. we often tend to think of money as like we got to do one at a time, whereas I want it to be yes and. So if you are carrying credit card debt, you might think like, well, I have to get that completely paid off before I can start investing for retirement. No, you can do both. You can do yes and. Yes, I am working on paying off this credit card debt while I am also sending $100 even. It doesn't have to be a lot, what I can afford from each paycheck to my 401k or my IRA. So it is important to be strategic and intentional about it, or as strategic and as intentional as you can be, because I know for some people, you start talking about money, the word percentage comes out and your eyes roll back in your head and you just can't pay attention. But recognizing that you don't have to do one, then the next, but do all at once within what you can afford, is going to be a more holistic way of taking care of yourself, taking care of your debts, and taking care of your future self by investing and putting money aside for your goals.
Let's go to John in Green Bay with a tip. John, hi, go ahead.
Hi. We cut the cable cord, just have a TV antenna. We get 39 free HD TV channels. We always get our videos for free from the library. And then the oldest prepaid cell phone company has a $199 for the year, unlimited calls and texts, and like 12.1 gigs, and that comes out to $16.58 a month.
Have you, John, when you did cut the cord with cable, did you intentionally put that savings somewhere, or how did it get wrapped around your budget in other ways?
Well, we were able to build a very large, safety net
okay.
in our savings. Also, we put that money into our children's college funds.
I see. John, thank you. Emily, go ahead.
So I think that all sounds wonderful. You did the audit, figured out what was going to work for you, and cut the costs that you don't need anymore. The one thing that's brought up for me is that these kinds of audits need to be done regularly, because money-saving tips from 5 years ago are not necessarily going to work again now. So, for instance, when you said you cut the cord, that was the most common suggestion 10 or 15 years ago, and people would say, cut the cord and get a streaming service. Well, now there's so many different streaming services, and getting all of them, it's the same cost as cable. So I'm assuming by cut the cord, we're talking here about getting rid of those streaming services. Same thing with the data plan and all of that for your cell phone. That the cost-saving measures were different 10 years ago than they are now. And similarly, I was just reading about how Airbnb used to be touted as cheaper than hotels, and these days it's about the same price, and you also have chores when you have to leave. So remembering that these kinds of audits are ongoing. It's not a set it once and forget it forever.
It makes me think about how you say that money and finances are like laundry, that it's never mm-hmm. done.
mm-hmm.
What can you leave us with, some hopeful, helpful advice for keeping up with this chore and not seeing mm-hmm. it as a dreadful chore?
Making money a game for yourself is one of the best ways to stay motivated to continue these audits and things like that. So that's why I suggest things like thinking of it like Tetris, recognizing that it is like laundry, and, finding ways to make it enjoyable in the same way that you found ways to make laundry work for you, is going to be, not only is it going to help you make better financial decisions because you recognize, like, I can't put this off. I can't just put it out of my mind and never do it. But you can find ways to make it more enjoyable once you recognize, like, hey, this is ongoing. And you know what? I love rainbow stickers. And so, every time I do my money, I'm going to put a rainbow sticker up. Or I love the feeling of saving money. I love the feeling of getting something for 60% off. So, rewarding myself every time I do that can to amplify that feeling. Whatever it is that works for you, because everyone is good at money in some way, is going to and really focusing on that is going to help you enjoy it more and do it more.
Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Emily Guy Birkin is a money coach, personal finance expert from Wauwatosa. Her most recent guidebook to money is called Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.